Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, May 24, 2022. The director of Jongle FM and the Union of South Sudanese Journalists lock horns over the suspension of staff at the FM station.
That is normal. It is normal. Suspension does not mean dismissal. It is suspension if to take you out of duty, and then you are also accessible for investigation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan Union of Journalists is calling on the director of Radio Jongle to withdraw the suspension of its staff for allegedly breaching government protocols. Viola Elias has the story for VOA from Juba.
Radio Jongle is back on the air today after Jongle state officials ordered the station to shut down last week. Jongle state information minister suspended Radio Jongle, accusing it of violating government protocols for not leading its news with the SPLM Day celebration on May 16. A day later, Elijah Alierkoy, the head of the South Sudan Media Authority, ordered Jongle state officials to lift the suspension, writing in a letter, and I quote, "Let Radio Jongle resume its normal transmission freely without further interference," end quote. In a letter seen by South Sudan in Focus, Radio Jongle Executive Director Tijuak Agwek suspended four staff members who he accused of breaching government protocols. Agwek tells South Sudan in Focus that the four employees, in his words, mistakenly ignored the protocols of the leadership of the Jongle state government when airing news on May 16.
That is normal. It is normal. Suspension does not mean dismissal. It is suspension if to take you out of duty, and then you are also accessible for investigation. Because investigation is like somebody is going through a law, the legal procedure.
The suspended employees are the radio director Jonah Kech Mabior, station manager Majok Gwet, finance officer Mathur Mabior, and chief editor Dengai Deng. Agwek says Radio Jongle is an independent media organization and journalists should remain neutral when covering event, no matter the language being used. Patrick Oyet, president of South Sudan Union of Journalists, says he has learned that two more journalists at the station have been suspended. Oyet says the journalist union considered the suspension null and void since Agwek failed to follow all labor laws.
The reason for us calling for the CEO of Radio Jongle to immediately withdraw the suspension is that the CEO did not follow the labor law. Section 75, subsection 1, says that if your employee is doing work which you are not satisfied with, then you have to inform this employee. You also have to provide training. Subsection 2 says you should provide training to this employee so that the employee can do the work to the level that you want.
Oyet calls Agwek's explanation for suspending the employees unacceptable.
There is no protocol as far as we are concerned, as far as our work is concerned. There is nothing called protocol. What is news is what we go by. So the reason that the CEO is giving for suspending this journalist for us is not satisfactory. That therefore means the suspension is invalid.
Oyet warns if Agwek does not withdraw the suspension, the journalist union will file a lawsuit.
We have given up to 7 days. If he doesn't withdraw the suspension, we as individuals will talk to our legal team, instruct them to take legal action, because this is a violation of the rights of the employees who are journalists, who are our members. We as individuals will not be quiet.
Radio Jongle director Jonah Kech, one of the suspended employees, says he was surprised to get a suspension letter. He calls the station's news coverage on May 16 a misunderstanding and insists his team had no hidden motive in mind.
The reporter preferred the hobby of the governor, especially at the cliff, choose the part of peace, because the governor was talking about peace mostly, to keep that essential part of peace for tomorrow on the 17th. The chief, editor-in-chief, prepared the news, and the news were announced on the 16th evening. On the same 16th evenings, the whole program, the entire program of Radio Jongle, the entire program of 16 May was played for 2 hours. It ran for 2 hours.
Akech says he contacted Tijuak after receiving his suspension letter, demanding an explanation.
I called him, what happened? He told me, yeah, that is a suspension letter, but don't let it be known. It should not go to media, you keep it. So we kept the letter.
Akech says the CEO of Radio Jungule came to the station and promptly fired the 4 employees rather than explain to the staff what was going on. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Officials of a joint political and security mechanism between Sudan and South Sudan are calling for the implementation of a cooperation agreement between the two countries. The group say the two countries should also provide security and protection along border crossing points, including the Abyei area. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Officials serving on the Joint Political and Security Mechanisms team began their meeting in Khartoum today to evaluate previous resolutions signed during a summit in Juba. In late October of 2020, Sudanese and South Sudanese security and defense officials signed a memorandum of understanding in Khartoum to strengthen security cooperation between the two countries. The agreement called for security of the two countries' shared border to speed up the movement of goods and travelers. At today's opening session, South Sudan Minister of Defense Angelina Teng reiterated her government's commitment to the full implementation of the signed agreement.
This is high time that actually we go beyond just making resolutions. We have decided a long time ago on the issue of the crossings, and it is high time that we find a way of operationalizing this and removing the obstacles that are preventing the opening of the soft crossing areas that have been identified.
Back in 2012, Sudan and South Sudan signed a cooperation deal on trade, freedom of movement, and freedom to own property. The two governments also identify 5 border crossing and River Nile for trade between the two nations. Teng says if cross-border trade is operationalized, both countries will gain economic benefits.
The two countries are losing a lot of revenues. We're losing in the billions because of the fact that the crossing areas that we have identified have not yet been operationalized.
At the same session, Sudanese Defense Minister Yassin Ibrahim reiterated his country's commitment to fully implementing the cooperation agreement and assured those in attendance that Sudan will withdraw all of its forces from the buffer zone.
We are ready for any kind of cooperation without any obstacles for the full implementation of anything that is in the interest of both countries. Interests that serve the unity of the two states that will achieve the will of the people, achieving their aspirations, peaceful coexistence, and a safe neighborhood in the two countries.
Ibrahim says once the agreement is fully implemented, security, peace, and stability in both countries and the entire region will be achieved.
We believe that the strategic relations on the official and public levels with our sisterly neighbor, South Sudan, need to include the common interests and should also be seen on a level that will bring security, stability, and service delivery. Our cooperation agreement is clear. We need to accomplish this journey together.
The meeting that is expected to wrap up tomorrow, when participants are expected to hear a report from the chief of UNISFA on the security situation in the disputed region of Abyei. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still on Sudanese affairs, the United States issued an advisory today warning U.S. companies of what it calls growing reputational risks of doing business with state-owned enterprises and military-controlled firms inside Sudan. Reuters quotes U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price as saying these risks arise from, among other things, recent actions undertaken by Sudan's Sovereign Council and security forces under the military command, including and especially serious human rights abuse against protesters. Protests have continued in the country for months since the October 2021 military takeover. Rights activists and Sudanese lawyers say dozens of political prisoners remain behind bars. Price says business and individuals operating in Sudan should undertake increased due diligence related to human rights issues and be aware of potential reputational risks of conducting business activities and or transaction with military-controlled companies. The advisory was issued by the U.S. Department of State, Treasury, Commerce, Labor, according to the State Department spokesperson. The African Development Bank Board of Directors has approved $1.5 billion facility to help avert what officials call a looming food crisis in Africa as a result of Russia-Ukraine war and other local factors. The bank's board say the continent risks shortages of 30 million metric tons of food, especially wheat, maize, and soya beans grown by the two countries at war. Timothy Obiazu reports from Abuja.
The bank's group president, Akinwumi Adesina, says the AFDB's $1.5 billion emergency food production plan targets 20 million smallholder farmers with high-quality seeds ahead of a new planting season that resumes in May. The idea is to make the continent less dependent on food imports by boosting yields of wheat by 11 million tons, maize by 18 million, rice by 6 million, and soybeans by 2.5 million. The intervention will also provide fertilizers and farm extension services, including post-harvest support to farmers.
Our $1.5 billion plan will be used to support African countries to produce food rapidly. Produce 38 million metric tons of food, in fact. The total value of the additional food production is $12 billion. The Africa Emergency Food Production Plan will deliver climate-resilient agricultural technologies to 20 million farmers. Majority of those will be women farmers.
The initiative will also increase access to fertilizers to enable farmers rapidly grow food. The AFDB says since the war in Ukraine started, the price of wheat across many African countries has jumped by over 45%, and that fertilizer prices have also shot up by about 300%. AFDB also says Africa faces a fertilizer shortage of 2 million metric tons. As a result, food prices have been impacted significantly. In Nigeria, prices were already affected by the pandemic, insecurity, and high local production overhead. Authorities predict a more dire situation for Africa in the near future.
The magnitude of food price increases and trade disruptions caused by the Russian-Ukraine conflict have hit Africa harder than other developing regions of the world, threatening to topple the continent's food systems already stressed by the COVID-19 pandemic. Africa must prepare for the inevitable global food crisis.
The United Nations says between 2018 and 2020, Africa imported $3.7 billion worth of wheat from Russia and another $1.4 billion from Ukraine. Nigeria's Statistics Bureau says last year's import of about $3.1 billion worth of wheat was more than 70% of the value imported the year before. In the last 3 years, the AFDB says 1.8 million farmers in seven African countries have benefited from its agricultural technology initiatives and improved wheat production in Africa by 2.7 metric tons. I'm Timothy Obiezu for VOA in Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we look at the conflict in Ethiopia. That story is lined up after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to introduce change?
You have to educate. Education
is the key factor to change. Without education, people will resist.
You have to educate the person. You have to educate people on the situation on ground, the implication of that situation, and if the change is to come in, what impact is that change going to create?
So the best way to introduce change is to understand the change, and you try to educate the people on what change is all about.
I think just go right ahead and do it, because there are always people who don't really like change, and there are also always people who like change and they're conducive to change. And so I think there's always going to be that one person who's like, no, I don't like this, it's different.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The violence may have stopped in most parts of Ethiopia's Afara region, but Afaris forced to leave their homes after Tigrayan forces occupied the region say they cannot return. And it's not just Tigrayan civilians who are affected by the conflict. Displaced people from the neighboring Afar region say attacks on their towns have left homes and livelihoods utterly destroyed. Linda Giftash reports from Semra.
Roughly 700,000 people have been displaced in Ethiopia's Afar region following violence tied to the civil conflict in the Tigray region, according to the United Nations. The Afar region had long-standing close ties with the Tigray region, so when forces aligned with the Tigray People's Liberation Front attacked, residents were taken by surprise. Halima Tahir Ismail is a displaced Afari living at a camp 100 kilometers from the region's capital of Semara. She says she was asleep when she heard shots from heavy machine guns. She and her family woke up in a war zone. She says husbands and children were scattered. People fled their homes because of the heavy fighting. Ismail says she fled with three of her children, all under the age of five, with nothing but the clothes on their backs. They, like other displaced people, now rely on food aid. She's heard from those who stayed in the Afar region where the Tigrayan forces attacked, and that the grocery store she owned was ransacked and destroyed, as was her family's home in Konaba. She asks, how can they go back to Konaba? If they return, she says there is no water, property, and household utilities like furniture were looted. Ismail says whether you were well off like herself or poor before the war, now everyone has been left equally impoverished. Valerie Browning, a nurse and volunteer in the region for over 30 years, visited northern communities of Afar days after troops pulled out in April, a condition of which warring groups agreed to allow humanitarian aid.
The destruction is absolutely systematic. It is house by house that they looted, house by house for the civilians, they've looted everything. And the government institutions, they either burnt them, exploded them, or they tore out all the machinery, all the technical stuff, and just ripped it apart.
The World Food Program and other humanitarian groups are distributing food and other aid, but it has been a challenge to reach everyone in the remote and rough terrain. While the WFP has given aid to 630,000 people, the total number of people in need tops 1.3 million, more than half the region's population. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Semara, Ethiopia.
In Uganda, civil society and opposition groups say the latest arrest of former presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye violates his constitutional rights. Besigye was arrested after he tried to leave his house to attend a protest against high food prices of goods and services. VOA's Peter Kloti reached attorney Matthias Mbuga, leader of the minority in the Ugandan parliament.
Dr. Besigye is exercising his right as a citizen. And under our constitution, one of the duties of a citizen is exactly what he's doing. And there's nothing illegal, there's nothing unconstitutional about a demonstration. What is illegal is a demonstration that is violent. Dr. Besigye is not violent. Dr. Besigye has not threatened national security. And therefore, arresting him because of protesting and asking others to protest in response to the government inertia and in an action or inaction on the state of the people's welfare is well placed in the law. So the police and their cousins in the military are just overzealous regime or operators. And therefore, I joined the rest of the country in not only demanding for his immediate release, but even stopping the impunity of the armed forces and state apparatus in abusing and intimidating citizens who wake up to exercise their right.
Well, but Mathias Mpuuga, some people suggest that he is breaking the Public Order Management Act by not following the rules if he wants to demonstrate, and that some of the actions he takes disrupt businesses and traffic. And that is unacceptable, they said. How do you respond to that?
Peter, we've been at that. It's not a new invocation by the regime security to try and invoke the Public Order Management Act, which actually was more or less annulled by the Ugandan Constitutional Court. The Constitutional Court, a year ago, hammered down a decision that rendered Section 8 of the Public Order Management Act, which required police permission and constitutional, and therefore, whatever they are saying, they are just trying to regurgitate that annulled section of the law. So there's no requirement for Dr. Besigye to get their permission. All that I know is to inform them. And they have no on record of ever allowing anybody, even when they are informed.
Talking about poverty, the Internal Affairs Minister, Kainda Otafiri, was quoted by the Ugandan's New Vision newspaper as saying poor people will not go to heaven because they insult God through lamentation and accusations every day. Unquote, basically saying people who do not use tools God has given them do not have to blame him for why they remain poor. What are your thoughts?
First of all, it's very erroneous. This country has more serious things to quote. Probably the state media is using that to try and divert people from the real issues. I don't think any serious media should waste their time on Jeno Tafire, whose poverty background is well known. So let him not try to waste people's time. It should be ignored. And the New Vision should be really condemned for trying to bring and promote a social climber like Jeno Tafire.
That was Mathias Mpuuga, an attorney and leader of the minority in the Ugandan parliament. He was speaking to my colleague Peter Cloti.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end the show with Lenson Lee and the song Morina Opidri. We've been listening to Nelson Lee and the song Morina Opidri. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking your time to be with us this evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Money, money, bring the wind through.